You ever wonder why we even need the Church of Jesus Christ? And if it is so important, why are there so many problems and messes in the church? I'd like to invite you to the West Coast Bible Conference called the Corinthianization of the Church, where we look at the problems that happened and that Paul addressed in first century Corinth. We're going to be taking this up on April 1 and 2 in Carlsbad, California. I will be speaking at the conference, Pastor Danny Hyde and Dr. Lee Gaddis. This is through the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals. You can register now at alliancenet.org. Again, alliancenet.org. Or you can call 1-800-488-1888. Again, 1-800-488-1888. We would love to see you at the conference. If you're a regular listener to Abounding Grace Radio, I would love to meet you. We have an exciting conference planned where we're going to deal with issues such as celebrity pastors, sexual morality, communion chaos, spiritual gifts, and the resurrection. This is such an important conference for our day. If you're in this area, this is right in Carlsbad at the Carlsbad Community Church, do please join us for this conference. Again, the Corinthianization of the Church, April 1 and 2 in Carlsbad, California. We would love to see you there. Visit again to register for the conference at alliancenet.org. They came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes. And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. He lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he had often been bound with shackles and chains, but he wrenched the chains apart, and he broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying out and cutting himself with stones. And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and fell down before him. And crying out with a loud voice, he said, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me." For he was saying to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" He replied, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And he begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now a great herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him, saying, "Send us to the pigs, let us enter them." So he gave them permission. And the unclean spirits came out and entered the pigs, and the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and drowned in the sea. The herdsmen fled and told it in the city and in the country. And the people came to see what it was that had happened. And they came to Jesus and saw the demon-possessed man, the one who had had the legion, sitting there clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who had seen it described to them what had happened to the demon-possessed man and to the pigs. And they began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might be with him. And he did not permit him, but said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone marveled. May the Lord bless this morning the hearing of his word.
Opening God's holy word with reverence and joy. This is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon.
Jesus Christ, and if he really is the eternal incarnate Son of God, how would that change everything in my life? We're going to look at a powerful section of scripture today in Mark chapter 5, where Jesus
casts a legion of demons out of a man. He's known as the demoniac. This very fascinating passage in Mark chapter 5, Jesus puts on display his glory that he is the Son of God, and then we have a series of responses to that truth. Dear listener, I hope you have believed in him as the Lord and God of your life. Thanks for tuning in today to Abounding Grace Radio. You're welcome to visit us on the web at agradio.org, agradio.org. The number to reach us is 888-504-8805, 888-504-8805. You're welcome to find us also on Facebook to make a contact, and do please consider us in your prayerful and your financial support. We need your help to keep Abounding Grace Radio going, and we have so many great opportunities with Abounding Grace, seeing that we are airing the U.S., Canada, and even Africa. What a wonderful door the Lord has opened for Abounding Grace Radio to take his gospel to the ends of the earth. Well, here now is the program from Mark chapter 5, which I have titled, Jesus Calms Another Storm. You can find that right on the web at agradio.org. We hope this program today is a great blessing to you as you understand more of the person and the work of the Lord Jesus Christ.
Well, just like last week, we come to one of these very familiar stories in the Bible, probably that you have heard preached throughout the course of your life many times, the well-known passage of Jesus healing the demoniac, as we call him. It has always left people, this particular passage and this demoniac, with a great amount of interest as you read the passage. What an exciting passage to read. It's intriguing. It's challenging us. It's having us think a lot about certain things and this power of Jesus to free a man who had a legion of demons. A legion of demons. But this of course, has led to the same problem that I asked last time, that we dealt with last time, like the storm, the sort of overriding approach when people and pastors and Bible teachers open up Mark 5, the sort of overriding approach that just like last time, this narrative is here to calm the storms of all in your life. So this particular passage gets the same kind of treatment. It gets the same kind of treatment that Jesus, and we've all heard the statement, you all have your demons, we all have our demons. Jesus has the power to break out the demons out of your life. I had a friend who asked me the other day, this Sunday, and so I told him Mark 5, and he came back to me the next day, and he said, listen, I read Mark 5 last night, and I spent some time thinking about that. Great passage, powerful passage. I have no idea why it was revealed. I have no idea why Jesus did what he did. Why did he do that? What does that mean for us? And as I began to look carefully at this, I think that's the question we need to first deal with. That really should drive us in understanding this particular passage in Mark 5. What in the world is this really all about? As I studied it, I looked carefully. I thought there really is a striking parallel here between the last passage of Jesus calming the storm. It dawned on me how similar these two events really are. From the perspective of the disciples, in both scenes, you have a situation that has turned absolutely chaotic and is absolutely terrifying to deal with. A great confrontation then follows with Jesus at the center, Jesus rebuking in both circumstances, and then a great calm. And then you have response. It really is the same sort of event if we look at this carefully and what had happened with Jesus last week calming the storm. And it's as if Jesus is not done with a particular question that he had asked of them. Remember last week at the end of Mark chapter 4, they last time had asked in the middle of the storm as everything had come crashing down on them, don't you care that we're perishing? And Jesus then, after he had calmed the storm, had a question of his own, didn't he? The question of Jesus was, why are you so fearful? Are you still without faith? Do you still have no faith? That is quite a question. That really is quite a question. That's a question I believe that drives what is about now to happen. As that came on the heels of him standing on the boat, and in the worst storm these fishermen had ever seen, Jesus speaks, showing his power and authority over all of creation. He calms the storm with a word, the word of his mouth. And that led to one more question at the end of that particular section where the disciples said, "Who is this? That even the wind and the sea obey him." Who are we dealing with here? Who is this? The sheer might of his word, the sheer power put on display with the spoken word, uncontested, undisputed power was put on display that forced them to that great question: who is this? Who are we following here? We're sort of at a crossroads here with Jesus. They're really being pressed now to reckon with who they have been aligned with. And what are the implications of that? What are the implications of that? And we could ask that question this morning. You all have said, I'm aligned with Jesus. I believe in Jesus. Have you really given thought to who you really are following and what are the ramifications and what is the meaning of that? I wonder. It was quite a moment in our study of Mark. For Jesus, in chapter 3, had faced a variety of different responses to him. Remember what some of those responses were? Some of them were running around saying he's a madman, he's crazy, he's insane. There were a variety of responses to his word. And then in chapter 4, he takes his disciples alongside of him and he explains that word of the kingdom to them. He shows and demonstrates that power of the word of his kingdom. But the test at the end of chapter 4 exposed, as Jesus said, when he says, "Do you still have no faith?" that they had not really taken that word up into their own hearts. And how is Jesus now bringing that out? Well, he's bringing it out by forcing them to reckon with who he is. When you begin to grasp that the one who speaks to you, when you begin to really appreciate that the one who speaks to you is the Son of God, that's what he's doing right now. When you begin to grasp that, when you see that power, you are forced either to bow or to run as fast as you can the other way. You are forced to bow or to say, "Jesus, get out of here. I want nothing to do with you." And that's where this is going to go today. The claims of his majesty, the claims of his person, what he is putting on display is pressing and bearing down now on them in a way that they had not felt yet before. He is pressing them to the issue of faith. He is really bearing down on them with this issue. And that's what this is about this morning. Jesus is now challenging his disciples who are to be his witnesses with the story, with the whole scene of the demoniac, to respond appropriately to who he is. To press this. And you see this unfold here with this great confrontation now that we move into. Another great calm, another confrontation, another great calm, and now a response that Jesus highlights that he's after. Different than the disciples' response. The disciples have just been through one of the worst storms they've ever seen. The most terrifying of storms. And they ask the question, "Who is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" It's no sooner, as soon as they ask that question, that as they get out of the boat, they've come to the region of the Gerasenes, they get out of the boat, it's night, and they look up on this steep hill, and coming bearing down the mountain, barreling down the mountain, is a monster at them. And that must have been what it looked like. Mark has really set this up. Mark has really painted a picture for you. This is the most scary figure they have ever come across in the course of their lives. Similar to the storm, now they meet the scariest figure they've ever seen. Last week, someone said to me that lake, being 700 feet below sea level with sharp cliffs and mountains in the dark, that must have been quite a terrifying place to be out in the night on that lake in the middle of a storm. And then, as he reaches land, Mark is pressing on us that same sort of feel that the person got last week in looking at the storm. How utterly scary both scenes are. Gergesenes, or the Gadarenes, means those who come from pilgrimage or fight. He really is capturing this as Jesus entering the dark realm of Satan, if you will. And there were, in this very steep hill, on this very steep hill, a series of tombs. The hill dropped right down into the water, so it was a very steep hill. And what we know of this place is that looking up from the lake, you would see little caves up on the hillside there. And in these caves, they were burying people for years. They were tombs for the dead. So you can imagine the terror here as they get out off the boat, and immediately they look up, and here comes this monster barreling down the mountain. It's from one terrifying event to another, to which the disciples are probably thinking, this following Jesus is really not an easy thing to do whatsoever. Here it is in this particular moment, and this Mark says this man dwelled in the tombs. We live in a day where everyone is obsessed with zombies. You ever notice that right now? Everyone's a zombie apocalypse and all this weird stuff. This is exactly what this must have looked like. From the other Gospels, we know he was naked. We know that because of this man, everyone avoided the entire area. You could imagine walking, and as you're walking by the Gadarenes up in the hills there, you hear screeches and yellings all night long of this man. The other Gospels say there was another man with him. They would cry out night and day in the middle of these tombs. And then they would self-inflict. This particular leader of it all would self-inflict, and he would cut himself with stones, so he's a bloody mess. You could hear mothers telling their children, listen, I don't want you, boys and girls, I do not want you to walk up there. The dead are walking around up there. You stay away from over there. The dead come alive. There's all kinds of demonic activity. The man is a living Frankenstein. In fact, there were probably so many complaints that at some point the city officials came together and it said that they tried to bind him. They had often tried to put big chains around this man. And it said that he pulled them right apart. Just the imagery of this that's being captured here, just what Mark is trying to do here, is really wanting you to feel the utter terror of this figure up in the tombs, cutting himself, pulling apart chains. He's a Samson-like strength, lion-like figure up there in the tombs. You know anyone who lives in tombs? Bloody, cursing, yelling, screaming, naked. No one can tame him. No one can bind him. Not even with chains. This had created a storm on land that no one had ever witnessed before and no one could deal with. Well, disciples get out the boat and here it comes right at them. Even more intriguing, of course, is to think about the fact that everyone in the region is saying that Jesus himself is the insane one. That Jesus is the crazy one. That Jesus is the one out of his mind. Remember Mark 3. Two champions, if you will. It's a sort of David and Goliath-like moment where this one comes barreling down the mountain out of complete darkness and here comes the light of the world to the seashore. Here's where I think it's wrong to read the passage and think that this is about Jesus dealing with demons in your life. This is a real David and Goliath moment. What are you learning about your Lord? The disciples have been full of fear. They are again panicked. But just as he was sleeping in the midst of the storm, down in the stern of the boat, now he's led them through the storm, and now he leads them right to this particular place at this particular time so that they would see this kind of confrontation. You expect an assault. You expect an attack. The next thing we read is, as they're getting out of the boat, as he's barreling down, he comes down and he drops on his knees, running, and he worships him. What a scene. And with a loud voice, he cries out, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, don't torment me." What a champion of Satan, huh? Coming down now and saying that to him. Now, here's where I think we need to see the connection. Here's where I think this really helps us to see the connection. The disciples had just heard the word of his kingdom, and they just saw him calm the fiercest storm they had ever seen in their life. And for the Jews, the sea was the place of the abyss, the demonic realm. Jesus has stood up as Lord over it all. And their question at the end of it was what? Who is this? And in the next scene, a duplicate scene, here comes the demoniac answering their question. He runs, he worships, he cries out with a loud voice and confesses on the knee, "You are the Son of the Most High God. Don't destroy us now. Please don't destroy us yet." In other words, the demoniac, under complete demonic influence, when faced with just the presence of Jesus, that's how he responds. That's how he responds. "Who is this?" the disciples said. "Who has come to us? Who has come down to deliver us?" In the next scene, the demons are broadcasting it. The demons. They know his voice. They knew who this was. They had known him from way back. As Jude says, they were all consigned, fallen angels, to the judgment of the great day. It was his voice that had spoke that eternal condemnation upon them, and they knew it was coming. And look at their response. That's the first thing we're all pressed to think about this morning. It's because of his sheer power of his presence alone, they can do nothing less and except when they see him but bow down, worship, and confess him. His disciples, "Who is this? Who is this?" You see why I pressed last week. We don't consider enough how great the gift of faith is. We don't consider enough how great the gift of faith is. James was so affected by this that when he wrote his little epistle, he said, "Listen, you believe in God, you do well. Even the demons believe and shudder." I've seen that. I can testify to that. I saw what happened. He was exposing their response. And that's why I press. Who do we come to hear today? Who do we come to listen to today when we hear his word? Remember Mark 1 when Jesus was preaching, which is what he wanted to do? And as he entered the synagogue, the first scene of his earthly ministry, he's preaching in the synagogue, and a demon was in the synagogue and had so heard the voice of Jesus. When he heard that voice, when he heard that authority, he immediately leaped into someone and had the great sermon interruption of the century where he yells out, "I know who you are," in the middle of the worship service. "I know you." Isn't it true that what lacks the most in our entire approach to what we're doing today is a profound sense of who you've come to worship? Think about it. Isn't it true that what lacks the most here this morning is a profound sense of who you have come before? The absence of awe and wonder and reverence and godly fear is so painfully evident in our lives. And how does that most show? Look at the disciples. They're fearing everything that is wrong. Everything other than him. That's why I said last week, trial and test that he brings upon us brings out real exposure, real panic, and we fall apart and we question him as if he doesn't even care about us. And the point can't be missed in this particular text this morning. His entire purpose that he had come through perfect love was to remove fear, to release from bondage, and to give us peace. From the demons comes worship, bowing, reverence, crying, confession. From us comes fear of everything that's wrong. Think about it. From the demons comes worship, bowing, confession. From us is the fear of everything that is wrong. We worry about life. We complain about everything, complain about every circumstance. We impute to God in the midst of our hardships all kinds of evil motives as if he doesn't even care. What was the moment that Jesus showed the most expression over in the life of Peter? Peter, who do you say that I am? Who does everyone else say that I am? Well, some say you're a great prophet. No, Peter. Who do you say that I am? Remember what happened? After this long period of training, after the Lord's long suffering and patience and teaching him and giving him faith, Peter says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Remember what Jesus said? Blessed are you, Simon. Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jona, because flesh and blood did not reveal that to you. But my Father who is in heaven, I say to you that you are Peter, and upon this rock I'll build my church. The gates of Hades will not overpower it. It had finally took hold of him. Finally. Which means you could sit here today and you could come and identify with Jesus and you have yet to reckon with who you're dealing with. The one who speaks is the God of heaven and earth. His voice holds the keys of death and Hades. In his hand are those keys, and in his voice, he determines how it goes. And all of a sudden, another storm has hit the disciples. It's a storm of grace, isn't it? Because it's meant to bring them to faith. In another display of uncontested power by the word of his mouth, he speaks again in verse 8 and he says, "Come out! Come out of the man!" And showing absolute power over the entire demonic realm, the demons come out of this man.
Thank you for listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Call us toll-free at 888-504-8805. That's 888-504-8805. Contact us through the web at agradio.org. That's agradio.org. We're on Facebook. Look for Abounding Grace Radio Ministry. Listen daily on this station and subscribe in iTunes or use our free Android app. We trust this program has encouraged you to trust in Christ for your standing with God and to live in His abounding grace.